Yeah, this is Willie Terry, your WOOC, Roman labor correspondent for the Hustle Mohawk magazine. And I'm here at the Siena College at the Underground Railroad Conference, I'm in a workshop called Education for Liberation, Teaching in the Freedom School Model, being run by Tom Rule,
yeah.
Okay, and who's a senior capstone researcher here at Siena College. How you doing?
Good, how are you?
All right. So you are conducting this workshop today. What is the major purpose or theme that you're trying to get out in this workshop?
What I was talking about in the workshop was my capstone presentation. So that was like my big research project before I can graduate as a senior here. So there were kind of two parts to the project that I wanted to convey in my presentation today. So the first was the research component. I wrote about a 40-page research paper on the Freedom Schools. So that's kind of just going over what they were, why they were necessary, and then the effect that the Freedom Schools had on both including the teachers, students, and the communities where the Freedom Schools were located. Because they had a pretty transformative effect on those communities. And then the second part is that I'm using what I learned, I'm using the research that I created to create like a curriculum type thing for a summer program that the Underground Railroad History Project is putting on to kind of continue teaching in the Freedom School model to empower students.
So how would this curriculum work,
Like the central focus of it would be voting rights, like as a history of voting rights from the end of the Civil War and Reconstruction into now and all the issues that we still face with voting in this country. So the main goal is to have students examining primary source documents. So today in the workshop, I had the participants go through a document called What a Colored Man Should Do to Vote. And what that is, it's just like a summary of what person of color would need to do to vote in each of the states of the South. And there's a lot of pretty limiting requirements on there, like you have to live in a town for 2 years before you can have the right to vote there. If you can't recite your state's constitution from memory, then you can't vote there. If you can't name all of the county judges in your state, then you can't vote there. So some pretty serious barriers were put in place, and the document, the pamphlet that I gave in the presentation today kind of outlines what those obstacles are so you can try and avoid them and hopefully be able to register to vote.
So you're saying that obstacles kind of still exist to keep people from voting in the country, or just maybe Maine is still in the South, because you concentrated on Mississippi.
Yeah, so the central focus of my research was Mississippi, as that's where Freedom Summer in 1964, that's where the thing was taking place. These are enduring issues in the whole country. I would say one of the biggest would be gerrymandering, kind of deciding election districts based on who lives there so that you can kind of orchestrate who's going to win elections. That's still an issue in pretty much every state that we're facing. But then there's also, we saw a lot of issues in Georgia in this past election with voter suppression, trying to suppress voters of color, making it difficult for voters of color to get to the polls to actually participate in the elections. So as a whole country, there's still some issues we're facing, and then other parts of the country are facing larger issues.
So what would you call these today, if you set that up today, what would you call it? Would you still call it a freedom school model, or would it be called something else today?
The main idea in the 60s when they were started was that they were going to try and basically give African Americans in Mississippi a better life, to empower them to make the necessary changes in society, to give them the right to vote, to kind of take the white supremacy in Mississippi kind of down a few pegs so that it would be more equal society. And there's still a lot of work that needs to be done to achieve that. But without Freedom Summer, Freedom Summer really got the ball rolling, not just in Mississippi, but across the country too. Like this is when we really start to see the civil rights movement start to really expand.
Mm-hmm. Have you looked into Mississippi recently in terms of, there's a place called Jackson, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you know about that?
I mean, I'm familiar with the city, but I don't know much about what's going on there.
Jackson, Mississippi, they have a progressive politics. They elected a guy who was a socialist, took over. And Jackson, Mississippi, they are supposed to be very progressive.
Mm-hmm. Good for them.
Was that a place where the Freedom School was operating? Was it, or what part of Mississippi?
So there were Freedom Schools throughout the state, they would kind of try and shoot for population centers. So there were 40 freedom schools in 19 counties of Mississippi, or 19 towns and counties of Mississippi. So Hattiesburg, I believe, was the largest. They had the most freedom school students. And I think they actually had two freedom schools in the city of Hattiesburg. So like Jackson had freedom. All this, every major city in Mississippi would have had a freedom school, at least one, if not more. And then they also would go into rural communities as well. And those were the ones where it was more county based. It would be a county freedom school and people would come from all over to
attend. What would you respond from the white residents to the freedom school? What were they?
Definitely not happy with what was going on. I get that would be a generalization. I'm sure some people were okay with it, but at the very start of Freedom Summer, like right as soon as the first wave of volunteers get there, three of them are murdered by white supremacists. Tons of Freedom School volunteers and teachers were arrested and then subsequently beaten in jail or what during the arrest. The white community in Mississippi was generally not very happy about it. And the white volunteers were immersing themselves in the black community. They were living with communities of color in Mississippi. So they weren't really with the white community. And because of that, there was a separation. So the white community in a specific area would know who the Freedom School teachers were, and they would be treated the same way that people of color would have been treated by those white people. So they were considered by a lot of white Mississippians to be kind of like traitors to the white race or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they did not appreciate these Northerners coming down to Mississippi to try and change the way things were.
Do you know if any students in Siena was part of that movement back in that time?
That's a good question. I'm actually not sure. I do not know. Generally, they came from like more prestigious schools in Siena, not to knock Siena, but a lot of them came from Stanford, Yale, Harvard, like the big name schools in the 60s.
Mm-hmm. So how would you assess the voting situation in, let's say, in this area?
So I'm not from this area, so I don't know if I would be the best to speak about it. I mean,
from New York?
I'm from New York, but downstate.
Okay, well, how do you assess New York period?
Okay. I would say there's still not enough people registered to vote. Not enough people who are registered to vote are actually voting. I mean, ideally, every single person should be voting in every election, not just for the president, not just for your senator, whatever. But local elections matter just as much. If anything, more change happens at the local level than the federal level. So I would say we're going to have a problem with our elections until everyone's participating.
But you notice that there's upstate, downstate.
Yes, there's a big divide.
It's a lot of conflict. But there are progressive politicians being elected based on, you know, votes coming from downstate.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think about the current New York State government in terms of...
I mean, it kind of favors me and my beliefs, so I'm okay with it, I guess, but it's really not an ideal situation because there are a lot of New Yorkers who kind of do get overpowered by the downstate New York City, like, vote, basically. So there's just more people downstate, and they have a lot of differing viewpoints from a lot of the more upstate communities. I mean, there is a divide there. But at the end of the day, I think we got to do what the majority of people want, and the majority of New Yorkers happen to live downstate. So it just kind of works out that way.
Why did you think that the Underground Railroad Company would be a place to present this workshop? Why do you think this was the venue to present this, as opposed to going into a community and presenting it?
Well, I was actually asked by Paul and Mary Liz to do this workshop, so that's why I would do it. But I think there would be a tremendous benefit for doing it in a community as well, because, like I was saying, until everyone is voting, we're not going to really be, our government is not truly going to represent the people unless all the people are voting. So by doing this workshop in a community, I would hope that I could encourage people who either aren't registered to vote to register, and people who maybe are registered but don't vote to get out to the polls in the next election.
A lot of people talk about voter education, you know, and I guess that's what they was doing during the Freedom School. In the Freedom School movement down in the South, they was, you know, when they was educating people, they also educated them about who to vote for, how to vote, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess they did that.
Yeah.
And you think that that would be a process that could be used up here in oppressed communities to vote education, to really educate them? Because a lot of people don't vote, and they don't mm-hmm. say, why should I vote? They don't kind of see how that connection, but they know that they should vote, but mm-hmm. they don't see the connection that really helping them.
I do think it is important to relay to people how voting impacts an individual's life, because whether you vote or not, the policies that those politicians are going to create are going to have some sort of impact on you. It might be minor or it could be big, but the laws that are made in our society are going to have an effect on us no matter what. So I think more people should be voting like that. But voter education can be risky, because if you're educating voters in a good way with information that's pertinent to them in their lives, I would say that's good. But then it kind of opens the door for someone to come in with like disinformation. And I would hate to see someone come in to try and educate voters with stuff that's just not true. So that could be dangerous. I think ideally every voter should, or every citizen should, take it upon themselves to stay informed in the issues that are going to affect them. And then make their own decisions.
But young people, how do we get young people involved in this process?
I know, yeah. So that's one very frustrating for me. I mean, I'm only 22 years old, and I know a lot of my peers aren't voting. They don't really take an interest in politics. And I find that incredibly frustrating, because we're the ones that have our whole lives ahead of us. Right. And we're going to be dealing with these issues for probably the next 50, 60 years of our lives. And I mean, if we don't start making the changes that we want to see now, it's only going to become more difficult for us to do it when we are like in power, when we're the old crowd. So I think we got to start now. I think every American should vote, period, regardless of age, race, religion, whatever. But yeah, I would love to see more young people coming out to vote, because I think we have a really good idea for where we want the country to go. And
so how did your family take it that you're getting involved in this issue?
I do have a little bit differing political views than some of my family, but I mean, they've never discouraged me from what I'm doing. They've always supported the electoral process. Like, they instilled a love of democracy and voting in me. Like, I remember I was a kid and my parents would take me into the voting booth with them and everything. So really familiarized me with that from an early level. So they're definitely supportive, even if we don't always agree on what we're talking about.
Okay. Tom, just one last question.
Sure.
So is there anything that you would like to say in reference to your project that people should really know about?
I would say just look into the Mississippi Freedom Schools. They are an amazing thing that happened, and they're a completely overlooked part of civil rights history. I mean, really very few scholars are writing about this. It gets very overshadowed by the voting rights aspect of Freedom Summer. But in my opinion, I would say the Freedom Schools did just as much, if not more, to have a societal shift, to change the culture of Mississippi. I think the Freedom Schools were a huge part in that, and I think we should take a closer look.
All right, thank you, Tom.
Yeah,
Tom,
of course.
Tom Roll, senior capstone researcher at Siena College, and hopefully we'll be hearing from you in the future about your project.
Yeah, thank you.